football on off the ball.
So Arsenal fans go, if we don't win the league, it will be slightly offset by Spurs going down. And Spurs say, well, if we do go down, it will be offset by Arsenal not winning the league. So there is, you know, they're going to be drowning their sorrows in Schadenfreude, I think, to an extent.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Welcome to Monday's After Ball. I'm your host for the evening, Dion Fanning. We've got a great show coming for you tonight. Brendan Fanning on the state of Munster rugby. Susanna Mullen will be taking us through a great weekend for Ireland in the Six Nations. And Jonathan Wilson and John Bruin will be joining me on the football show after 9 p.m. Lads.
What a night.
Evening, Dion.
What a weekend.
What a weekend. I'm across all sports this weekend.
You are.
Thanks to Arthur. Arthur sent me a message saying, and he made it sound very urgent, it was like there was a crisis. He said, "You're going to have to address the hurling," he said.
Yeah, I wasn't quite in that tone, but I suppose, yeah, we have a duty, you know.
We do have a duty. Well, you know, it's not just a duty, it's a pleasure.
Yeah. Proper substitute teacher vibes here. Going to say, well, Owen wouldn't make us do that.
Address the hurling. Yeah, well, no, I definitely, it's that substitute teacher feel of everyone just, I can tell. It's just like, this guy, does he really know what he's doing? Does he? How are we going to get him through the rest of the day? No, it's great to be here. And it was a great weekend of sport. Obviously, from my point of view, the Manchester City Arsenal game was an exceptional game. It was finally a game this season that actually delivered.
It was sensational.
Yeah, I don't know how it felt, Steve. You were at the stadium, for the first 15 minutes at home, it felt like a brilliant game, and then it kind of withered away a little bit towards the end of the first half. But that second half was kind of what it doesn't quite bring you back to what Manchester City Liverpool games were, because it's different. It's not as end to end. It's not as frantic. It's a lot more tactical, but it definitely felt like that kind of top end of football that we've been missing out on in the Premier League.
Oh, 100%. Like, I think it even did have that kind of frantic kind of feel to it as well, a bit like those Liverpool. I don't think Arsenal were as... It's funny, we had a couple of Manchester City fans came up to us, myself and Brian, before the game, and they were like, Arsenal coming here, they've got to park the bus. We're going to park the bus and they're just going to play for a draw and we're going to do them. And we were like, yeah, like he's probably right. Like they probably will kind of take a very measured, controlled approach to it. But they didn't, you know, they did. They went for it, you know. There definitely seemed to be, Mikel Arteta was true to his word. He was on fire. He brought the fire. He brought his dinner. He brought some really good players.
If you brought fire and dinner together, it's just going to get very messy and dangerous. Like, unless you're having kind of, you know, just sort of a little mobile barbecue, and you're just trying to, it's going to get very messy.
But like, it was just, the atmosphere was brilliant. And I know City do get a bit of stick, their supporters from rival fans, for not having the kind of atmosphere. And sure, geez, even their own manager is giving them stick for not bringing the kind of atmosphere that they need for those big games. But it was absolutely brilliant, really, really brilliant. And the supporters were really into it. I thought Cherky trying to goad the Arsenal supporters right, celebrating right in front of them, was brilliant. And he's just that kind of brilliant, kind of maverick player that I think City maybe have lacked in the Guardiola era. It's almost, I would say, to Brian, it's a bit of a throwback to Gheorghe Kincladze back in the day, Manchester City in the mid to late 90s. And I think Pep is kind of, you know, It feels like his last season. This could be the end for him. He wants to go out on a high. And maybe he's just given up on trying to control a player like that. He's just said, right, I'm not going to try control him. Just let him go and do what he wants to do. And he did have a bit of a free role in that game yesterday. And I think it certainly, it hurt Arsenal. But Arsenal were really good. I thought, you know, from back to front, I thought Gabriel, maybe there was a bit of head loss from him, as we know. You know, literally and figuratively, he was probably lucky not to get a red card. And of all the players, you want him to be kind of showing a very measured approach and to be kind of calm and cool in that kind of a situation. But I thought across the board, there was very few Arsenal players you'd say didn't turn up yesterday and didn't play well. Madueke, probably the only one. I wasn't surprised to see him going off at halftime. But outside of that, I thought they played really well. And off the back of that game, you can't say Arsenal bottled it. They did turn up. They played really well. And to go down by one goal to City at their ground isn't really a bad reflection on this Arsenal team.
No, but they didn't bottle it. but they lost, and all they needed was a draw, and all they needed was a point. And I wonder, in that kind of sense of, oh, Arsenal, you know, and you talk about what City fans were expecting, what Arsenal fans were expecting, what was going to happen, and it didn't happen. Have people lost sight of the fact that, you know, a point was such a good result for them? Mm. Like, Arsenal are still in a pretty, like, I think quite a strong position, but like a point was really, really valuable to them. Mm. And that's all they needed. And in a way, who knows, but in a way, if Arteta had taken the approach he has taken, maybe they would be more likely to get that.
Yeah, I think so. Look, if Eze had scored that goal, like, geez, it was so close, like, to crack off the inside of the post and to flash right in front of goal and not go out of play. That was a bit unlucky. Kai Havertz should have put that header away. Like, that was an incredible miss, really. And look, I'm not saying, like, when you do look back on this season, whatever happens, if Arsenal don't win a trophy, there will be an element of bottling it, because they were 9 points up. They've been on top of the table since October. If they drop down to second after City play Burnley on Wednesday, if they lose, and I think they will lose to Atletico Madrid in the Champions League semi-final, you can start the bottle talk. But I was impressed that they did go for it yesterday, because they could have taken a far more negative approach. And if they'd lost it after a negative approach, well then, I think there would have been a lot more heavy criticism for them. But to go from having a quadruple chance to now clinging on to a double chance, certainly, it's not good for them.
Stephen, you might start us off the news round then with reaction to that Manchester City-Arsenal game.
Yeah, well, it would appear that the title race is now in City's hands, barring a major upset at Burnley this Wednesday night. They started this yesterday 6 points behind the Gunners. Kai Havertz levelling the match after a massive blooper from City goalkeeper Gianluigi Donnarumma, whose teammate Ryan Cherki had opened the scoring about 90 seconds earlier with a wonderful individual effort. Erling Haaland scored the winner in a tense and nervy affair, which finished 2-1 for City, and that means they will go top with 5 games to go if they win their game in hand against Burnley. Arsenal have led the league since early October, and around the start of February had a 9-point lead. The Gunners have won just one match in the last 6 in all competitions. Despite that, Gunners boss Mikel Arteta was refusing to give up hope on winning the title and ending a run of 3 consecutive second place finishes in the Premier League.
Wow, obviously they were very disappointing not to get a result from the game in the manner that it happened. That's the feeling immediately you could sense that was they were talking about, and they said, okay, we lost an opportunity today, but we have the biggest one now in the next 5 games, so let's do it. I mean, if I have to pick the players to win the Premier League with 5 games to go in our hands and be in the semi-final of the Champions League, I think I should be at home. So it's not the case, it's not needed, it's never been needed even in difficult moments, so we go again, that's for sure.
City boss Pep Guardiola, this is brilliant, lads. He lavished the losing side with praise.
So they are really, really good, and the people say they don't have momentum. When you see them to play and compete, and the duels and long balls, second balls and set pieces, is an extraordinary team. Otherwise, you cannot do all season top of the league in the Premier League and in the Champions League unbeaten. So I know how difficult it's beating once, imagine twice, in a margin of 3 weeks or a month. They were step a little bit higher than the Carabao Cup. They arrive a little bit, 9 points, 10 points, a little bit there. All the messages was easy for Arsenal, and that's why we had that margin that we keep, to be honest, today. But they make a step forward. They are so aggressive to go to the process, because they are so aggressive in a man marking, a frontal ball, Saliba, Gabriel and Incapié, and all of them. All of them win duels, so they're really, really tough, have momentum, they have chances. Small margins. We are there, but the reality is one. Who is the top of the league? We are not. The goal difference, who is better? They are. So, step by step. But, of course, I said, we got hopes, you know, to still extend the chances to fight until the end.
Now, I did ask my co-commentator yesterday, Brian Kerr, if Donnarumma could be an issue for City as they try and claim a 7th title in 8 years.
Well, he would be, but you know, if James Trafford was the other goalkeeper who's played for England not so long ago, but I don't see them dropping him. He also made some very, very vital saves in the game today, and his distribution let him down on the goal. Obviously, made big error, but equally he started the move that led to the winning goal with a brilliant catch, throw out quickly to Nick O'Reilly, got him advancing up the pitch on the left side. He's able to link up with Doku. O'Reilly gets her again, plays her into Holland, who scores. So, you know, he had a mixed game, I would say, today, very much at fault in the goal. There's a concern for the manager, I'm sure it is, but I think they'll dominate the games they have to, they've still to play. But there's plenty of tough games in that for them still. You're looking at Brentford and Bournemouth, Aston Villa. You know, these teams are not going to lie down and just, you know, roll over and allow Manchester City to steamroll them. But we've seen it before. And Pep gets more points in April than anyone else, you know, season after season. They average, I think it's over 2.5 points per game, you know, which is very, very high average in the critical stage of the season, as there always is, April into May.
It's funny as well to mention that the throw for the winning goal, I love that. And I she's like, I should have watched it back, but he almost checks himself, doesn't he? He waits, and it's, I don't know who was it that made the run from Arsenal, and clear, it was just how clear as day they spotted it. Oh, something's happened.
Yeah,
that's not right. Mm. And it was just the way he checked it and got that thing out. It was so quick. Mm. Just, I thought he was brilliant, and the save he made as well from the Havertz in the second half. Amazing, just how quickly he was out to make himself big as well. But
it's a funny one with him, because there was obviously the mistake for the goal, but there was also those moments when you can see the City defenders were saying, there was one moment in particular where they were like, where were you? You've got to come for that ball. Ball went right across the front of the goal and he was just on his line. Like, that's not what he does.
Mm.
And so there are moments when he does create a little bit of doubt and uncertainty in the City defence as well, I think.
Would you trust him to go clanger free now between now and the end of the season?
Well, I think City's running. Like, and I always think that, you know, you see that, like, today now, everyone, after the match last night, everyone is like, you know, predict the run-in, and it's impossible to predict a run-in. Now, like, but City's games look, like, the Bournemouth away, Everton away, do look like a couple of games where they could stumble, especially if I think there's a sloppiness to City still. They're not that's part of the charm that they have right now. And, you know, as you say about Cherkies, like let them out there and go out there and enjoy yourself, Tony, which Pep has never said to anyone before in his life. But it's there's still that kind of, because of that, there's a bit of vulnerability too.
Yeah, it is mad, like, that Ruben Dias and John Stones aren't even in the picture at the moment. Like, they've been playing this last period with Kusanov and, like, obviously, yeah, he's got more experience. He's a better, you know, I suppose, on paper, better defender. Kusanov, I think, has been pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it is mad that they've pulled off this run with a very patched together centre-back. I say patched together like this. Obviously, he's dropped a few million on Gehi, you know what I mean? But
yeah, it's a slightly unorthodox back four. Mateus Nunes, a right-back as well, was a midfielder before he stepped foot in the door. Manchester City, for me, Nick O'Reilly and the emergence of him in the last couple of months is a big one. I never thought I'd see England have that, like, I'm wary saying the word inverted, but that, like, Philip Lahm, Joshua Kimmich style can move from fullback into central midfield so seamlessly.
And so seamlessly. That's the thing about him. He's just like, you're kind of, where is he? He doesn't seem to have any doubt about what he's supposed to be doing or where he's supposed to be playing. And he just moves through that position, those positions.
Yeah, he's positionless.
He's
completely positionless. And he pops up with goals, he creates goals. Like, he starts that move, that the throw from Donnarumma. Yeah. Like, I know an Arsenal player kind of vacates the space, but he has the kind of wherewithal to move into it. And then advances forward with the ball, gets on the end of it after Doku gets it again. Like, I saw Pep kind of laughing after him, saying, you know, if he isn't given the young player of the year, like, it's a bit of a farce.
Yeah.
Well, he's like one of these players. He reminds me of, like, you know, sort of Rijkaard or somebody playing for Ajax back, you know, those days where actually doing everything, taking it out from the back, bringing it forward. Like, he's an exception.
Yeah. And his finishing is really good. Like, he's very calm.
Yeah, yeah.
From that goal he scored against Chelsea. It was funny when I was doing my match prep and I found a little article which said Nico O'Reilly's Jamaican Irish heritage. So I was like, oh, hello, and had a look, and apparently there's very limited information on his family. They keep themselves. They're really, really kind of private. And the article was basically just like, you know, well, we know his dad is from Jamaica, and then it said, but the name O'Reilly is an Irish name. And then it gave this like kind of almost like AI generated explanation of the name O'Reilly and where it comes from. I was like, ah, damn it. Anyway. Yeah.
So how, but, where were your hopes after that?
Oh, well, but there, another one bites the dust.
And yeah, I think we need to have, you know, set our targets realistically. There is a game tonight, Stephen, involving one of the relegation strugglers.
Yes, the West Ham manager Nuno Espirito Santo is hoping his star players can deliver in tonight's crucial Premier League game at Crystal Palace. Their 4-0 win over Wolves saw them get out of the bottom three at the expense of Spurs at the weekend. The North Londoners drew with Brighton at the weekend, so a win for the Hammers means that they will go 4 points clear of the bottom three. The kickoff at Sellers Park is at 8 o'clock. Just quick run through the teams there. It's Henderson goal for Palace, back three, Richards, Lacroix and Canvo. Munoz and Mitchell are the wing backs, with Lerma and Hughes in midfield, Johnson and Pino just behind Larson. West Ham with Hermanson in goal, Walker, Peters, Mavropanos, De Sassi and Diouf, the back four, Bowen, Fernandes, Socek and Somerville in midfield, with Pablo playing off Castellanos. That one kicks off at Selhurst Park at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
How are you feeling?
How am I feeling? Yeah. I don't know how I'm feeling. I was covering the women's national team game with Steve on Saturday, and I walked out and I went to get a bit of food, and I was literally the 90th minute of the Spurs game, and it was 2-1, and I turned the phone off and I said, that's sad, West Ham, we're going down. And then it was only about an hour and a half later, I checked the phone, for Manchester United, and I saw it actually finished 2-2, and I was sitting there eating the meal with a big, you know, glum head of me going, oh, this is it now, we're on course relegation. And it's just sparked me into life again. I don't know if we win tonight. My only kind of solace is watching the Crystal Palace players out on the beer after winning in Florence on Thursday evening. Yeah, it's filled me with a little bit of hope.
And John Salako as well was there.
Yeah,
wasn't he?
Yeah. The rest of the couple of players. The West Ham team is just so funny. Like Mavropanos was, you know, arguably one of the worst defenders you've seen in the West Ham shirt. And now all of a sudden, the last 3 months, he's a colossus back there. The two lads who came in up top, Tati and Pablo, are, you know, the ball goes to their feet. They look so clumsy, Pablo in particular. Yet they come up with goals. I think if West Ham do win tonight, Spurs have to win three games if West Ham win tonight. And can Spurs win three games when they haven't won a game in 2026 in the league? I don't think so. So tonight really is the make or break. If West Ham do win, I don't want to say that's that. You never want to say that's that when you're a West Ham fan. But, you know.
Go on, say that.
No. I will not be goaded into that. But, like.
Get your bottle out.
Put the other North London club on it. Yeah. Can you see Spurs winning three? I don't know if I can.
Spurs, Dion, like, come on. Xavi Simons. Like, it was like one of those old Serie A goal celebrations. He's up in with the crowd. He's got the shirt off. He's gone absolutely bananas. And then.
Well, it was kind of extraordinary for especially from a guy who's done so little.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? All season. And it's like, you know, he's celebrating. He's like, look, follow me. Like, follow, look, if only all of you could follow me. And then he posted it after the game.
Oh, Jesus.
Did he?
I saw that.
He posted a picture that's like, you know, it's like, did you leave? Like, did you go home before? Like, did you leave the ground or something thinking you'd won? Like, how can you post that? When all Spurs had to do, they had to win, because they're in terrible. Like it's like, and there was obviously De Zerbi is like if he had time, he would probably like they are showing that there's a little bit more purpose in them. There's clearly they're not the demoralized rabble they were under Tudor or under Thomas Frank. Like there's something that there's a little bit happening, but. To concede that goal, to not, you know, to not win that match is huge. Like as you say, if West Ham can get a win tonight, then it's looking
big. Never pin your hopes on West Ham. I think a fan of every club in the league has learned that lesson somewhere along the line, especially a West Ham fan.
So you got Danny Dyer behind you there.
That's all we need, isn't it? The spirit of Danny Dyer. Get us over the line.
There is some news relating to the Ibrahima Konate contract saga.
Indeed, and from the horse's mouth, Dion, Konate has revealed he is close to an agreement with Liverpool on a new deal with the club. The French centre-back's current contract is due to expire at the end of the current season, 5 years after he joined from Leipzig for around €41 million. Konate has previously been linked with the move to Real Madrid, but the player told the media after the Merseyside derby win yesterday, there is a big chance he will be at Anfield next season.
Yeah, I guess that's good news. Good news for Liverpool. It says how poor Liverpool's season has been until, you know, beating Everton yesterday, that this is now, they can spin Konate staying, given the season he's had, as good news. And I suppose it's one of those things where it means they don't need to look to, you know, bring another player in that position. So it's a little bit of admin taken care of. You know what I mean? It's like you come home and someone's taking care of all, you know, taking in your milk that's been delivered and all that kind of stuff. There's a bit of like, it's just, yeah, okay, we've got a centre back there and we can move on. But it doesn't seem like you wouldn't be saying, right, it's not like Van Dijk in his prime signing a contract.
Yeah. He is a good player though. Like we've seen in the past, like he is a very, very good defender. I don't know. Like it's not the departure of Trent Alexander-Arnold. I don't think that's made him a weaker defender by any means. Is it down to Virgil van Dijk's maybe his regression this season? Like he's kind of fallen off it a bit. But like he is a good player. We know that. And like I don't know he obviously lost his dad this season as well. And he seemed to, what was the game at Anfield? He came back in. He scored the goal in front of the cup. And he kind of had maybe about four or five really good games after that. Last couple haven't been brilliant, but like he obviously is a good player. And
no, he is a good player. It is better. It is on balance. It's probably better for Liverpool if he stays and if he goes. And it shows. Again, I also think with Liverpool right now, I don't think you can. Like they've had so many players that have performed below their standard this season. Mm. That you actually at a certain point have to go, well, what is it? Like is like McAllister, Konate, Van Dijk, Salah, Gakpo, even if you like, you know, the new signings. Like the new signings at Liverpool, like it's extraordinary. Like watching Isak again against Everton. And it's like, you know, the one thing you could say is that injury doesn't seem to have affected him in any way. He's the exact same player he is after the injuries he was before. He's doing nothing. Like he's still just like he got, nine touches in the game against Everton, five against PSG, and you know there, at a certain point, you like all the talk is, oh, he didn't get a preseason, he didn't get this, and okay, this was a bad injury, and it's going to take him a bit of time to come back. But at the same time, there is nothing, like there are no, like you know we're talking about Spurs and a bit of glimpse of something. You look at Isak and you think there's nothing there, and. Like, you know, and you see the goal that Salah got and like what they're losing, even Salah in the diminished form he's in this season, what they're losing when he goes and what they're left with is still going to be a huge, huge challenge for them.
At least he got a nice rest this summer. Wait, he is actually.
He is
World
going,
Cup,
yeah.
Isn't he?
Yeah. I'm joking, of course. Last minute, Graham Potter.
That's, I'd say Liverpool are delighted with that anyway.
I do think it'll be a different kind of shape to the team when Mo Salah isn't there. And I don't think they're going to necessarily make that transition. Why Mo Salah still is there. And like at Newcastle, Alexander Isak was the focal point as front of that team. Just the nature of the beast when Mo Salah's there, you're not that focal point and stuff isn't being ran through you. And not every time when a midfielder gets the ball, like say Bruno Guimaraes would have at Newcastle, that his head is up looking for your own. He's looking for Mo Salah's own. He's looking at, you know, if Gakpo's dropping inside on the left. So I do think like you probably will see a switch up next season. And you will see more of a link up between Wirtz and Isak. Going vertically rather than using those wingers either side of them, which I think that will benefit him a lot. But yeah, it's been a stark viewing. Alexander Isak so far.
And there's some breaking new manager news this evening, Steve.
Yes, hot off the electronic press. Bournemouth have confirmed that Marco Rose will take over as head coach from Andoni Iraola in the summer. The German has signed a 3-year contract with the Premier League club. He counts Dortmund, Leipzig and Mönchengladbach among his former clubs. Iraola announced last week that he will be leaving at the end of this season.
He's going to be interesting where he goes.
My inkling is you're kind of thinking Real Madrid, nah, he hasn't got the personality. Barcelona, he probably doesn't kind of play the kind of football. I'm thinking it could be City. If Guardiola does leave, he seems like a really good fit for City.
Interesting.
What do you reckon?
It's not a bad chat. Again, I think that there is, I think he's a brilliant manager. Problem managers have now are so many managers that they don't have like they don't have that huge CV that they can bring into a job like that, which means, you know, like Thomas Frank a bit at Spurs, like it's like, can you, you know, what is, are you going to be able to translate it into, and like this is the thing about going to the big clubs, it is the scrutiny that you're put under as much as how you play that matters. Like it's the relentless questioning, you know, it, like Thomas Frank would have, like he could have had bad runs at Brentford and nobody's paying any attention. But every game is something. And we go to sit somewhere like City, Iriola would have to deal with that all the time.
Yeah.
I had someone suggest that to me yesterday, Iriola and Manchester City. And my initial inkling was, if Guardiola was to go, would Manchester City just revert back to that Guardiola type signing where they just go for a huge name? I was thinking, like, do you wait for after the World Cup, the likes of like Julian Nagelsmann has done it at a top club in Bayern and now at a country with Germany. I do think there's a lot to be that to being ready for that step up to a big club. I wonder, would it benefit Iriola to go to, say, if he went back to Athletic Bilbao, or, you know what I mean, his home club, I know there's going to be a managerial position there available come the end of the season. Is that maybe just the necessary step that he has to make? And not see managers just make that leap from, you know, let's face it, a fairly mid-table club.
Bournemouth listeners throwing their radios across the room.
I can't argue with that.
It's the way he said it, though. You know, in a mid-table club, as if you can say,
when you're a fan of another mid-table club and you've experienced that throughout your whole life.
Who's that? Bottom of the table.
Who's that? West
Ham. Okay, now you've offended them.
Yeah, well, show me their UEFA Conference League medal, and then we can talk,
yeah,
right?
That's true.
I just wonder. I just think, is it worth making that little, you know, middle step before jumping all the way? Like, I know, obviously, Iriola's already been in the Premier League, but I'll never forget when Ruben Amorim was in his first couple of weeks at Manchester United, and he just couldn't get over the media. Couldn't get over that every single thing he said and did was scrutinised by absolutely everyone. And I know he's already in the Premier League, but he doesn't face that at Bournemouth. You know, when's the last time you were clued into an Andoni Iriola pre-match press conference or post-match interview with Patrick Davidson? Yeah. You know, can you recall any?
Well, that's it. And when so those crisis moments when people are looking for you to say something or do something that you can't really anticipate or predict until they come along. The news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie, subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation. Welcome back to Off the Ball. Great day at the Aviva on Saturday. Steve-O, when can supporters buy tickets for Ireland's big World Cup qualifier in Cork?
Yeah, the FAI confirmed today, Dion, that tickets will go on sale on Wednesday. The match against the Netherlands is being played at Páirc Uí Chaoimh on Leaside. Ireland go into the game with an outside chance of finishing second in the group after beating Poland back-to-back on Saturday night. The French and the Dutch drew in Auxerre. The match against the Dutch will kick off at 7:30 on Friday, June 5th in Cork. We do know, of course, Denise O'Sullivan, the local girl, and Emily Murphy are suspended for the game after their yellow cards against Poland on Saturday. As it stands in the group, the Orangi are on 8 points with France on 7 and Ireland on 6, 5 points clear of Poland at the bottom. Former Ireland defender Louise Quinn was on duty with me for the game after that 1-0 win against Poland on Saturday. She told me that Ireland can still aim for second place in the group.
Yeah, you absolutely have to, and it's also not writing, you know, this Polish team off. They've had two very good performances, especially against the Netherlands. Once they got the red cards, you know, in the France game, but they were very much in the game. So again, if, you know, if they're maybe going nicking some points, you know, not 3 points here, but maybe, you know, a little draw along the way. And yeah, I think as we've approached those games, especially France at home, yeah, absolutely every chance. They're really putting every team up to it here, and yeah, they're going to know that they're coming in against a very, very tough Irish team, and now not just defensively but very much going forward.
There's no break for Ireland in the Women's Six Nations Championship either, so who are they preparing for next?
Yep, they'll go and search for a first away win over France in the Six Nations in 13 years this week. They'll head to the home of Clermont, hoping to build on their record win over Italy at Dexcom Stadium over the weekend. It's understood Scott Beaman's side have no injury concerns ahead of facing Les Bleus, and they continue training in Dublin today. France centre Gabriel Vernier has been ruled out of the remainder of the tournament with a shoulder injury picked up in the win against Wales on Saturday as she won her 60th cap. Their head coach Francois Ratier has called up 18-year-old Aelig Tregway to replace Fournier in the squad. Fournier's injury is a blow to France, who've already lost their key centre Joanna Grisset to a knee ligament injury. France won their opening two matches against Italy and Wales to sit second behind world champions England in the table. Beaman's side lost to the French by 5 points in the quarterfinals of the World Cup last year, and captain Aaron King admits this is a chance for revenge.
To be honest, I think we'd be lying if we said it wasn't a bit of a revenge game, and I think, yeah, we're that little bit more eager because of that, and I suppose we showed in that game what we're capable of and that we are able to compete with the top, you know, four in the world and break into that top two of Six Nations. So it'd be great to do it and, you know, put our talk into action.
And Munster Rugby have announced their latest contract renewal, I think.
Yes, Dion, the province has confirmed Edmund Dogbo has signed a new deal just 2 months after making his Ireland international debut. He made his Munster senior debut in 22 and has scored 7 tries in 29 appearances to date. And his new extension means he'll be at the province until at least 2027. Meanwhile, Caelan Doris, Josh van der Fleer and Andrew Porter all set to be assessed for Leinster ahead of their URC clash with Benetton this weekend. They missed the win over Ulster on Friday. James Lowe has returned to training, but a decision won't be made on any of those players until later in the week. And Trevor Woodman says he's delighted to be joining Connacht next season. The former England prop is taking up the role of scrum coach, and he'll join them for pre-season over the summer.
And now we turn to Gaelic games. We address serious issues.
It's funny, even having a chat out there, it was such a busy weekend that as much... I had no concept of the football at all. From the weekend until kind of coming back and revisiting afterwards. You know, you're like, because you couldn't avoid the Premier League on Sunday. Mm. You had the hurling, but then you have these other results coming in as well from the National Championship and everything else. And it is hitting that spot, it feels now, where it's not going to abate at all for the next few weeks until you're almost out of the provincials and the league's over and different stuff like that. That it's just, there's so much on now all at once.
And then the World Cup.
Yeah, it was one. I know it's a strange thing to be complaining about. I just found it brutally tough, especially that 2-6 window where you're like, you want to watch Clare Waterford. You're like, I'm going to watch Clare Waterford. I want to see what this match happens here. And you have 3 Premier League games on the same time. All of them seem to be giving something out that was worth kind of tuning in for.
Yeah.
And then after that, yeah, Cork Tip and trying to double screen with Arsenal City and.
Yeah.
Or listen on the radio, of
and
course.
Then on Saturday, then you had the women's rugby, the women's football all clashing. There was Camogie on, there was, and then you had the Munster hurling games. Like, it's just Ulster football. Sorry. It's an awful lot. And there's between both players not really being allowed to speak to media and so many games on at the same time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stories getting lost in there.
Loads.
Everyone seems to is happy now, are they? I don't mean that in the general sense, like, but just about like structures. I don't want to bring structures up either. But they're not. I'm looking at Arthur here now.
Sorry, am I happy with
it? It seems to be a settle. Everyone said, right, this is working. The clubs are happy. The players are happy. But again, as Steve-O says, like that sense of, you know, what's going on. I'm not, you know, I'm a drop in and drop out viewer of Gaelic games, and this format, this way doesn't work for me, because I'm not the target audience, so it doesn't matter. But I'm just saying,
there you are.
That sense of it being, and you know, the great thing that you would get in championship matches in the past, where like the build up is like a prize fight, like there's a 2-3 week build up, everyone is talking about it, that thing is happening, and that doesn't happen, and it's clearly not happening for good reasons. But as somebody like who wants to sit down and do, you know, and just watch as much sport as you can, you do sometimes think, oh, where is it? And unless you really plugging into kind of what's you know, what's on this weekend, you can miss it.
Yeah.
They've lost that exclusivity feel to it. Because these are like, there's like, to take hurling, and increasingly if the Leinster Championship is kind of as weak as it now seems, so if their top material for thing, terrible thing material, but I think with the way it plays out with weeks on, weeks off, you have about 5 weeks of round robin Munster Championship, you have the weekend of the final. There's quarterfinals, semifinals, finals. Semifinals are the same weekend now. Yeah, they're the same weekend now. So it's about 7 or 8 weeks, whatever it is, give or take, if you're lucky, and there'll be something kind of interest every one of those weeks. And one of them's gone. And it's just like, it's like it's gone. It's not with a whimper. It was on RTE, both games, back to back. It had a good share of the market. But it is kind of incredible that it's like an eighth of your year or thereabouts is now finished. And to your point, it's like, yeah, you'd hope you'd be able to talk about it a good bit in the build up, because week two is coming next week and it's going to fly through that. All of a sudden you have a quarter of your year done and it's still April. And I know it does work that way, but it's just that there's so much else on that what it'll be looking at in terms of, like, in a season like this where there is a massive Premier League title race and, like, it's going to captivate people. It's very hard to get eyeballs then, even. You're sacrificing so much of your weekend because it becomes easier then as well. Like, I watched Kilkenny Galway on Saturday. If it was a throw up now between any of the rest of the games in Leinster, unless it's kind of do or die, whatever, with Kilkenny maybe towards the end, I kind of feel I'm okay to park that in real time. It's like, right, that's that kind of boxed off. That's a standard. If there's something else on, that's going to be like, if City are playing whatever in the thing, I'll probably have to watch that. That's more. So it's just that case. I know what you mean in terms of it's probably, it's obviously, I suppose it suits the majority of people who are involved or who have a stake in it like that. But from a spectator's point of view, it's
And it all takes place, like, you know, there is a rhythm to these things, which again, you know, you get used to. And like, as you know, you should be on holiday in Ireland somewhere in July, but matches on, you know what I mean? But matches on, and people on the beach listening to matches on the radio or whatever they're doing.
But
it can be a modern version of that.
Yeah, of course.
And I don't know how many, but like by July, it's all, like there's nothing happening, it's gone in August, like it's all wrapped up and there's a few matches left in July. But like that sense you would have had when you know, just again, those things, like I don't think, like America wouldn't, even a country like America wouldn't change the baseball season.
It's October, yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know, they have spring training. That are important and are culturally important. And that's the thing I think that you can lose sometimes.
Yeah.
Anyway, Stephen, lots of championship action.
There certainly was, yes. The quarterfinals of the Leinster Football Championship threw up a huge shock. Favourites Meath were beating my neighbours Westmeath by 418 to 25 points. Danny McCartan's goal putting the finishing touches on that victory. Superb wing-back Matthew Whittaker told our own Jonathan Higgins after that win that Westmeath weren't happy with some words written about their county in the build-up.
Yeah, like we're a really tight-knit group. I suppose when you're on the receiving end of so many of those losses, you have to have a special bond to come back from that many defeats. Like, there were some dark days in that dressing room and they were running out of things to get us motivated. But I suppose, like, we probably used that as motivation, those losses as well, to come back. And to be honest, I felt we were in the perfect position this week. You know, no one expected anything from us. You watch all the interviews all over the country and it's all about Meath. It's all about unlucky Westmeath. Oh, they had a great win last week and they might put it up to Meath, and by God, did we put it up to them today.
Sounds like there's a few things pinned to the dressing wall, perhaps.
Absolutely. There was a couple now, in fairness. And look, there was, like, I seen Pat Splann had a comment during the week that we're an underperforming team. And you know what? He was right. But today we just proved him wrong.
As a man who's got Kerry blood in him, how do you feel about your countryman Pat Spillane driving Westmeath on to that victory?
Well, they said he was right. He just said he was right, but we proved him wrong. That's what.
Oh, God.
So look, you take your motivation where you can, and you know that was a heavily motivated young man.
Well, they will play Kildare in the semi-finals. Defending champions Louth are into the next round as they beat Wexford 125 to 11 points. Dublin came from behind to beat Wicklow 216 to 214. Just a 2-point win in Aughrim with Dean Rock in charge there, of course, as Ger Brennan serves his suspension. Wicklow boss Oisín McConville spoke to Wicklow GAA TV's Michael Sargent.
Yeah, it probably feels worse today because, you know, we were chasing the game towards the end and we had the opportunities. We felt as if we had all the momentum and we just didn't see it out well enough. You know, we just didn't have the composure to see it out. Ugh, I proud of the lads. We showed everything you need to win a Leinster Championship match, except for probably for us that last little bit, which is important. But I can't be too harsh on them, because like, a lot of these lads are young. They've had very little exposure to this level of football, and they're improving all the time, and they're getting better all the time. And there's going to come a time where they're going to close out these games, but today, like, it just feels as if we've left a really good chance behind us.
Now, in the Ulster Football Championship, Monaghan are into the semi-finals. They survived a late fight back from their neighbours Cavan to emerge 27 points to 2-14 winners in Clonus. They'll play Derry in the next round. Derry on Saturday eased into the semi-finals after being too good for Antrim, winning their quarter-final by 2-23 to 1-13. Lachlan Murray and Paul Cassidy with the goals for the victors. In the Munster Hurling Championship, Cork got the win and the bragging rights over Tipperary. The Rebels, holding off the challenge of their rivals, come out on top 29 points to 122. Stephen Gleeson spoke to Cork boss Ben O'Connor after his side's victory and asked whether the All-Ireland final or league final defeats were used as motivation.
No motivation. We've a crowd of fellas down there that are training since last November, and obviously we addressed it at the start about the All-Ireland final last year, and that back of the head straight away. Then after that, league final was the league final. We're disappointed we didn't win, but we'd only 2 weeks to get ready for this after. So if you're starting out the start of the year, this was the most important game that we've had so far.
League is league, Arthur.
League is league. Did any of you see that game? You were obviously busy, you couldn't see it.
Yeah.
The first 23 minutes.
Okay.
Perfect.
It's
over, yeah.
The post-match. So I don't know what you very know of Ben O'Connor, how he's conducted himself, the Cork manager, since he was in there. He's kind of very forthright, very straight down the line. He was getting a good tune out of them. Obviously awesome background and everything. But he did this strange thing afterwards where he seemed to go out onto the pitch, which was instantly flooded with supporters and stuff, and made a point of going around to every one of his players in the moment, there and then, to congratulate him. Almost a little bit like you'd see in football, but I suppose it's not, with the waves of people there. So he was having to stop on his way to sign something or get a picture or whatever, but very purposely going around to every single one of his players to thank them. And obviously the camera picked up on this and followed him around the whole thing. And it was just, it was surreal, because it's probably not that unusual thing, a thing to do. But at the same time, I don't really recall seeing it. I don't know.
And why do you think he was doing that?
I don't know. It's impossible. He in no sense of the word feels, seems, looks performative. It doesn't seem that way at all. He seems so authentically himself.
Yeah.
That's kind of the USP there. That's why it makes him. But at the same time, I thought, you know, everyone's going to see this. That's not a negative. It's not even It could be. It could be great. It could be showing great camaraderie. But it's like, why not? Even from just a practical point of view, you're going to get swarmed going out here. Why not just wait? You will see them like 20, 30 minutes time tops. I couldn't. I was. I don't know. I don't know the sentiment for being suckered in, because that's where the camera went.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm being told to think about.
But is everything framed by the All-Ireland last year, and because you people are looking at that and thinking, what is he saying? Like everything, like it's such a notable.
He's the new man in, so he has to do things in a different way and try and separate it or make this team feel different. But it's a weird one. Because I suppose like in most things in sport, like at this stage, nobody's going to believe in Cork until they do it. So maybe it doesn't really matter what he does. Maybe it's like, if he believes it's working anyway internally, that's fine. Because the outside perception of Cork or him is not going to.
Yeah, I think there was also maybe just a danger to focus too much on that game. Because I saw them. I was at Croker when they gave the Dubs a trimming in the semi-final. Yeah. And even in that performance, I could see there were certain parts that Cork game wasn't up to standard. Surprisingly enough, and it was the same throughout the year. There was, you know, so there was, it's not just that Tipperary game, there were other games in that championship last year that there are things that he needed to remedy. And look, who am I to tell Ben O'Connor? I'm sure he knows all that. Maybe that stuff that he'll have worked on before.
Very tough tightrope he's walking though for that degree.
Yeah, yeah.
For a county that's not won in All-Ireland in 21 years. But the base expectation will be you have to do it.
Yeah.
If you want to be regarded as a success. He's put himself, not just by taking the job, not by anything he's done. He's put himself in a really tough position. He's chosen to embrace a very tough position.
I went down to Cork City versus Sligo Rovers game about 5 weeks, I think it was, after that final.
Yeah.
And there was people going to Turner's Cross talking about the hurling match
still
5 weeks later. So that gives you kind of an idea of the how big it was in the county. Clare also have their first win of the championship. They edged out Waterford in a shootout at Ennis. Final score there was Clare 233, Waterford 421. Galway opened their Leinster hurling championship with a win on Saturday night. They beat 14-man Kilkenny by 325 to 116 at Pearse Stadium. John Donnelly was sent off for the Cats at the start of the second half, and Kilkenny ball Derek Ling assessed his team's performance after that game.
I felt we were going to have to take our chances today, and I felt we were just second guessing a little bit too much in the ball. I thought we were a little bit nervy, to be honest. Obviously the last day up here wasn't a good experience as well, and maybe that played in our minds a little bit. I've no doubt about the character in there. There is a bit of change. Obviously we've lost a few players and we've a few lads still away from injury, but you know, we're asking a lot of some of the younger players as well. Some of them came in today, you know, did their best. And look, as far as I'm concerned now, this is game one. It's over. We've lost it. It's more or less knockout for us now, and we have to face up to that. And we need a quick turnaround next weekend.
Elsewhere, Dublin and Offaly played out a 2-28 to 4-22 draw. Wexford edging out Kildare 1-22 to 1-14. It was a role reversal in the Munster Camogie Championship. Tipperary beating Cork 1-18 to 2-9. Dublin got the better of Offaly in the Leinster Camogie Championship on Saturday. 3-15 to 2-9 winners in Tullamore. Roisin Kirwan then was the hero for Waterford as they beat Clare after extra time in the Munster Championship.
Thanks, Steve-O. That was the news round on Monday's Off the Ball. We'll be back in a few moments.
Off the Ball, daily.